Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them. And designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click. All complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max. 2 years later, George Floyd's death, taking a look at how his life changed. How is it different? It's certainly different. And there have been a lot of changes. Many of them for the good. Some slow. Some seem to be stuck in neutral. Joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, the man that runs the 4th Precinct in the north side of Minneapolis, Charlie Adams. And he is somebody that I always check with to get the temperature of what's going on in Minneapolis and beyond. And Charlie, thank you for joining us tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mike.
Take me back, I guess. I don't think I've ever asked you this question, but it happened on Memorial Day 2020. Do you remember that day? Did you know right away that this was going to be something that was going to be drastic and significant, or was there not enough information at that time?
Well, you know, I received a call from my boss that morning and told me to go look at a particular community person's Facebook site to look at the video. And once I watched the video, I knew that we had some issues. Mm-hmm. So I immediately got ready, went down to my office, which was in City Hall, called up Chief Aaron Dowdle, and I asked him, I said, what do you need from me? He said, I need you to be at a 10 o'clock meeting with the community folks. So that's what I did that day and met with the community folks a couple hours.
What did they say to you at that time? Were they giving you feedback? What was it?
Well, the thing is, most of the community folks and some of my community partners, like Spike Moss, Reverend McAfee, Nakima Levy Collins was there, Armstrong, I should say. It's just a host of different community people I've been knowing for years. So it just was a discussion about what the chief was going to do. Talked about, you know, the importance to come out right away with some type of statement. They talked about having a particular officer Chauvin fired at that time. They weren't really sure about the other three officers at that point in time. But the chief said he had some things. He had to check with the city attorneys some things. And I think about 1:30 is when he made his announcement that he had terminated all the officers involved.
Did you think that there was going to be great unrest and protests at that point in time, or was it hard to tell?
At that point, that day, it was hard to tell, right? You know, but I know what had happened in the past with some of our other officer involved, that, you know, their potential for the unrest was going to be there.
Now, on top of that, your son is also on the front lines once this thing starts to reach its apex, and your son Charles is out there as an officer defending, and he's literally on the front lines. And as I recall, at best, I mean, it was pretty. The officers were, you know, I don't want to say they were targeted, but certainly they were. They were not respected like you think they might be in normal circumstances. What was that like to have him out there as well? And I know that you guys are well trained in this and you've seen things like that, but what was that like to not know you're sending him into the unknown as well?
Well, the interesting thing about that, he was out there and he was doing security for the firefighters, for Minneapolis firefighters. Yep. And I didn't learn until he did a HBO special that they were being shot at. And that was months way after this, and he never told me that story, how he feared for his life and the other officers that were out there. So, yeah, he was in the midst of it. Bullets were flying over their heads, and they were there for protection for our Minneapolis firefighters.
Yeah,
trying to put out the fires.
He told me that the turning point, at least for the police officers, was when the Humvees showed up for the National Guard, because the optics of that changed the crowd in terms of crowd control. Do you remember that piece of it?
Yeah, I do. I remember when they showed up, and when we had the additional resources from the State Patrol and from the National Guard, it was just a different feeling that now we have more support, because our officers for those couple of days were really overworked. They were trying to pull every resource from MPD to go out there and be on the front lines. And at that point, we just really didn't have enough people to deal with the mass crowds.
Charlie, what was it like the next few days? Were you guys on edge? Were you sleeping at the office? What do you do? How do you form at that point?
Well, you know, my position was a community, right? So we formed some community groups to go out and do some community protection for the neighborhoods that we couldn't protect, right? One of my main points of contact was Reverend Jerry McAfee and the other black ministers who went out and protected like Solo Foods, because we kind of lost Cub Foods in North Minneapolis due to some looting and things like that. So I was just positioned different community groups to help us make sure our community is protected. So, but my night, I was up every day, and I didn't go to bed at 3 o'clock at night, right? Because I was in strict communication with the 4th Precinct Inspector. At that time, it was Kevin Paulfus and his staff. And then I was also in contact with Chief Aaron Dondo, you know, nightly. So it was real chaotic for all of us.
You remember that Saturday, Thursday night, they burned down the 3rd Precinct. Friday night, they shut down 35 for a while, and then Lake Street was set on fire. And the next day, they implemented a curfew, and everybody knew it was at 8 o'clock at night. Charlie, I don't know if you remember this, because I was over in North Minneapolis that day, I remember, and talking to some business owners and whatnot. But it was a beautiful day, and you could just feel it building throughout the day. Like 8 o'clock was the line in the sand, and nobody knew what was going to happen, and different business owners were going to protect their businesses at all costs. I just remember that eerie feeling in North Minneapolis as you saw cars driving around and you weren't quite sure who was on what side of things. What do you remember about that day?
Well, you know, that actually the Friday is what I remember the most, because when they were in the 5th Precinct and they were burning down like the bank, Wells Fargo.
Yeah, I was right there. They've taken that ATM machine apart. Yep.
Right. And I worked in that precinct as a patrol officer for 7 years, right, and then went back for another couple more years as a sergeant. So that really hit home for me, because that was my area that I patrolled for all those years. So, you know, and the very next day, I was just so upset about what happened over there, all those businesses being burnt out. You know, it was that eerie feeling. I think I reached out to our local radio station when the curfew was going to be imposed. I reached out to KMLJ.
Yep.
You know, and had KMLJ and Walter Cuber Banks.
Cuber,
you know,
yep.
I had reached out to him, and I actually reached out to Terry Lewis to do some type of public service announcement about go inside for the curfew. So I was actually in communication with Terry Lewis and his brother Jerome Benton out in California. And so Terry did a little quick PSA for us, and we were able to get that on KMLJ through Walter Banks.
Oof.
So
there was a lot going on. So tell me this. How has it changed in the last 2 years? How do you feel about North Minneapolis, the 4th Precinct, or even over the 3rd Precinct? You're familiar with them all. How is it different 2 years later?
I think people are still, hurting over it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the healing has not really begun, I don't think, with some communities. I mean, Northside, our community is basically starting to heal, and they've been very supportive of myself and my staff and my officers. And I like to tell the story how we had an open bid this year for officers to go to any precinct within the city, and my precinct was the first precinct to fill up. And it wasn't because of my leadership. It was because they know they received support from the residents of North Minneapolis, right? I don't think the other precincts are seeing so much support, you know, But it's been a lot of change for us in Minneapolis. There's been so many policy changes that it's kind of hard to keep up. Every week there's three or four different policy changes that we have to make changes to. So we've been doing a lot to make those policy changes with the last 2 years.
I know one of the areas that concerns you a great deal, which isn't in the 4th Precinct, but downtown Minneapolis. And I asked you one night, we were talking, and I said, why is that? And you said, because many of the areas are territorial, meaning you know the people. But in downtown, they gather, and they're from all over. And therefore, you don't know, and you don't have the same contacts and conduits that you do in other segments of the city. And that's why downtown Minneapolis becomes a little bit more potentially scary, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, and I've always learned when I worked in Mayor Belton's office that downtown Minneapolis is important to the state of Minnesota. If we lose downtown Minneapolis, then the state loses, right? So it's important that we make sure downtown Minneapolis is safe. I know Inspector Peterson has done a great job of taking that, Ninth and Nicollet area back. He's also used community resources such as New Salem Inc. We Push for Peace, Mad Dads.
Mad Dads, yep.
Yep, groups on the ground to go over there and assist Target with some of the issues they were having over there. So, it's interesting to see other inspectors using community folks to help assist with some of the crime issues.
Charlie, if you see a group of people gathered, as we do frequently downtown Minneapolis, and you've got a police uniform on, is it easy for you to walk in and begin conversations with them, or is it a stay-away situation? What is that like when you see people and you say, I can't quite tell what's going on there, but I got a pretty good idea it's not good?
Well, yeah, I mean, like North Minneapolis, I experience that all the time. I just go up and ask them what's going on, and have that conversation with them. A lot of times when you have the conversation with folks, then you'll get a sense of what's going on, right? Most people, we try to tell our officers, you just got to go out there and talk to folks and find out what's going on and just have a conversation. They may just be hanging out and not even really doing anything, right? And then you learn a lot from them that was actually what's going on in the area if you just open your mouth and have a conversation with them.
Last, Charlie, how do you see the next year in North Minneapolis? What concerns you the most? What gives you the most optimism?
Well, our violence is still up. We had a double homicide 2 weeks ago. Then there was a double homicide on Robbinsdale. All that stuff is connected. So I've just got to, keep making sure that, my officers respond, give service to the community. I'm working really hard with my community partners, but we have a lot of other agencies like ATF. We have Hennepin County Voltoff. We have the State Patrol. We have a lot of partners that's coming in and working in North Minneapolis, which actually is going to make a difference. For the bad guys out there creating problems in the community, we're going to come after you.
We're coming.
That's my motto.
We're coming, right?
Yep, we're coming.
Yep. Make no mistake, and you heard it, so don't think we're not. Hey, Charlie, thank you so much. Always enjoy it. Thank you for some perspective on this. I look forward to seeing you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Charlie Adams. I tell you, I've been reflecting a lot today and the last couple of days about, what happened 2 years ago. I'll tell you a poignant moment that I've never disclosed before when we come back. Stay with us. So much going on, so much to process, whether it's Texas or looking back 2 years later in Minneapolis. Just a lot of stuff going on. But one of the things that I remember, that I'll never forget, was a few days after the riots had subsided and we were all trying to figure out what's next. And the devastation, the carnage was unbelievable. It was everywhere. And if you toured Minneapolis and St. Paul, the Midway area, for sure you saw it time after time, what had been done and the destruction. And they had a March of Faith Leaders. And they gathered in St. Paul. And they gathered to march as one. Faith leaders from all over. Christian and within Christian, you could be Baptist, you could be Catholic, you could be Lutheran, it didn't matter. And you could be Jewish and you could be Hindu, it didn't matter. They gathered together. And everybody's searching for answers. And they just wanted to show their strength and that they had a synergy and they had an alliance amongst each other. And three different ministers, all African-American women at different times, ministers of different churches, came up to me and said, we watched you out there during the riots, and I just want you to know that our family at one point in time stopped and said, and we just said a prayer for you, that you get through it safely. And then another one would say something similar. We're praying for you. We were praying for you throughout. And then a third one said the same thing. And it brought me to tears. And it gave me such a sense. These are three African-American female ministers that, and I grew up a small town white boy, right, from Gaylord, Minnesota. We don't have a lot in common except our spirituality and our beliefs, or Christian beliefs in this case. But to feel that, to see that, was such a ray of hope. And it was so much bigger than what was going on at that time. It was so much bigger than everything we were seeing and feeling at that time. Now, a lot of things happened during that first week after. But what a lot of people don't realize is the after effects, and the after effects are twofold. It's fear and it's disrespect. Fear to be in the city, disrespect because law enforcement officials don't get the same respect that they used to. And 3 months later, what many people will forget was the worst night that I ever experienced on the streets, and that's when they came after downtown Minneapolis, when police were in pursuit of a man that was wanted for murdering someone at a parking garage, and they tracked him down to 7th and Nicollet, and he shot himself, killed himself, suicide, broad daylight. And somebody yelled, "The cops killed him," even though he had taken his own life. And they proceeded, they meaning the protesters that came in and gathered, to try to tear downtown Minneapolis, to try to burn downtown Minneapolis down, and they did some damage. Oh, did they do some damage? They started a fire inside of Brits. We watched as they took a garbage can, and they used the garbage can to break the window and then enter whatever it is. In this case, Devil's Advocate was the name of the restaurant. And they did the same thing over at Ruth Chris Steakhouse, and they'd pull safes out of there. And I went out there to try to report a few times, and I remember having two of them live on TV with me saying, "We've seen the tape," because we had possession of the tape, and this was a self-inflicted wound. You guys are protesting not the cop shooting someone, but a self-inflicted wound. And I've seen the tape, and we have seen the tape, and we have verified the tape, the video. And they said, "We don't believe you. We don't believe you. We think a cop shot him." And then it was then that I realized that this is going to be a really difficult hill to climb, because there's such a mistrust and a disconnect. Even when we tell them we've seen the video, and if you're not on the side that they want you to be on, you're in trouble. And that's one of the biggest things that we need to overcome in the years ahead, the months ahead, the years ahead, for sure in Minneapolis and beyond. When we come back... he too was involved in it, and today I saw him again. He was over at St. Paul Highland Park High School. Toya Daniel is his name, and he had a member of the Timberwolves with him. And some of the good things that they're doing to restore it in St. Paul and beyond when we come back on Sports to the Max. Sports to the Max, taking a little bit different turn as we look back 2 years ago to George Floyd, and incorporate in the Texas shootings and everything else, as is germane right now. Joining us in the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline, the one and only Teo Daniel, who I got to know as well through the protests, I've stayed in touch with, and today I saw him out at Highland Park High School. More on that in a minute, but he joins us now. Teo, thank you for joining us.
Hi, how you doing, Mike?
Good, always good to visit with you. Take me. What was the first time I met you out there? Was that the plaza 2 years ago? I can't remember exactly. I remember meeting you, and down by U.S. Bank Stadium?
Exactly. It was out, right outside of U.S. Bank Stadium at actually the first protest.
And was that the first one?
On the turnout. But the very first one, we were uncertain on the turnout, and all of a sudden 10,000 people showed up.
And you needed water and everything else to get through it. And then what did you learn over the next several days? Because you spent a lot of time in that area.
I just learned that there, you know, people can come together peacefully in the community. And I really seen that. And I had a lot of hope for the city. And I had hope that that we can make a difference if we come together as a community.
Do you think that was achieved to an extent? Or 2 years later, how do you feel about it?
I do feel like we have made progress.
Yep.
Although there's still a lot of work to do. I think people are understanding that the awareness was met, right? Mm-hmm. But now it's like, what next? And a lot of people are confused on how can we still continue this fight for justice and this fight for equality. through other endeavors besides marching. So we're trying to figure that out. A lot of people are trying to do that, and that's why I did the project today on the day of George Floyd's anniversary, to kind of show an example of one way you can help your community.
Okay, explain what you did today.
So today we had a group of young individuals at Highland Park High School who interned at my company, Eterna Media, and learned about different types of technology pertaining to the Web3 space, in particular NFTs and how you can use NFTs to impact communities.
I'm going to stop you right there, too. Just explain what an NFT is.
NFT is a non-fungible token. So just to simply put it, it's created on the blockchain, and it's a lot of people are using digital art to express that. So it's like, you know, let's give an example, like a picture of a painting, but you put it in, you make it in the digital world, and that way the people, the blockchain, which are different computers around the world, can communicate with each other and authenticate that this is the real deal right here. And this NFT digitally can be sold and resold again and resold again and resold again and resold again. So there's some type of significance to this certain NFT, you know, like a collector's item. You know, now they're seeing a lot of sports memorabilia are being transferred to digital NFTs and are being resold and stuff like that. They can actually generate income, and you can connect that through what they call smart contracts. You can put in that smart contract that a certain percentage every time it's resold goes to this charity, this organization, this community project, et cetera.
Who would buy it? Is it people that want to print it out and hang it on their wall? Who is it?
It's all different types of people. It's kind of like, you know, depending on the NFT, what type of art is it? Who is the artist that created it? Who's the athletes? You know, it's kind of like, you know, why do people collect baseball cards, or why do people collect digital art, or why do people like certain fashion? So it all depends on the creator of the NFT, as well as what the utility behind the NFT. Some people collect certain NFTs just because it invites them into a community of people that own similar NFTs, which they then discuss on a Discord. But that's a whole other story that we can get into.
So in essence, what you want to be is an original, and you want to create some kind of a picture or something, in this case, what we're talking about today at least, some piece of art that is original and unique, and then there's a way for you to, in essence, patent it digitally, and then once it moves, so too does the money move with it?
Exactly. So you can make a collection of NFTs, right? You can have 500 of them, you can have one of them, you can have 1,000 of them, you can have 10,000 of them. So let's say, for example, when the Super Bowl was held, we had every player on the field sign this NFT, and was only 10,000 of them made, right? Those can resell forever. So 50 years from now, somebody could say, I have the digital NFT from the Super Bowl when it was in Minneapolis. And people will actually want to buy that because they want to be able to hold that. And then you can connect that to a certain charity that every time it's sold, it goes to that specific charity and whatnot. And so documentation. Go ahead.
I said things just move from account to account digitally, and you don't. It's not cash business. It just moves from place to place, and you've got it in the bank.
Exactly, and it goes through what they call cryptocurrency. Right now, it's Ethereum that they use from a lot of them, but there's Solana and all that kind of stuff that is more environmentally conscious, and those are some of the things that they're working on right now to make this type of technology safer. But all in all, the reason why I'm really getting into this space is because I know that this type of technology is here to stay, and I want people of color to be able to experiment and be aware of what's going on in this shift right now and be able to contribute and participate so they're not late to the table.
Theo Daniels, our guest. And how does Josh Okogie come into this?
Well, you know, one thing about the youth is they love sports, and there's a synergy between sports and technology that you're seeing right now. They're turning NFTs into highlights. You can buy a certain dunk that's an NFT that you've seen in the playoffs, for example. And how technology is interacting in sports is very interesting to a lot of the youth. So using that sports awareness as a gateway to get kids to be attracted to that. They're like, oh, sports and this new Web3 area. It's very exciting. And right now with the youth, we're competing for attention. And I knew that a lot of the stuff about this stuff wasn't being taught at schools. So I wanted to take upon myself to partner with people like Josh Okogie, who really cares about the community and really drive awareness to this new technology, not for the financial gains, but for the tremendous social impact that we could make by using this type of technology.
So what you wanted to do today was to unleash some of the creativity in the kids and let them know what was possible? Was that a part of the point?
Exactly, to let them know what's possible. These kids have been working all spring. So a lot of the teams, you know, which is called MNFT, shout out to MNFT. You can follow them on Instagram. But we wanted to get them together and work with them for the entire spring. And they wanted to showcase their artwork. They wanted to gift it to the Timberwolves player, Josh Okogie, as well as Jared Vanderbilt. And also, some of these proceeds that from the NFT launch that we're going to be launching soon here are going to go to building a community tech hub that is in the same neighborhood as George Floyd Square at the Sabathany Center on 38th and 4th.
Yeah, you've already got that picked out. What will that encompass? What will that be?
That's going to be a place where inner city kids can go there and learn about all different types of technology, not only learn about it, but have access to technology, have access to career pathways in these fields, as well as, you know, be able to have fellowship there, you know, and have a safe space. This community tech hub was designed by the youth, and it's for the youth. And that's through a nonprofit called Smart North. You guys can go check them out at smartnorth.org if you want to keep up with the community tech hub. But yeah, I mean, we're pretty excited about this, and we want to keep going on. As really, you know, this area of media and tech drive a lot of wealth. I mean, as you can see, people like Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, these individuals passed up traditional wealthy people in a matter of years. So we know that these two spaces generate a lot of wealth. But unfortunately, these are also two spaces that don't have the representation of people of color that I would like to see. So my goal is to get more people of color into these spaces, starting with the youth, because the youth is our future, and potentially have these people create genius ideas and create youth and bring it back to their own communities.
Tio Daniel, our guest, who is the profile of the kid that gravitates to this? Can you describe him or her?
To be honest, you know, it's really all different types of kids. You know, a lot of kids are like in this space. You know what I mean? Definitely the gamers, right? The kids are like on the computer. But if we can see today, you know, when I was growing up, we all liked to be outside. Today's generation, they all like to be they all like to have the TVs to their face, right? They always want to be on the screens. So I've seen a wide demographic. I mean, kids who like music are in this space. Kids who like gaming are in this space. Kids who like sports are in this space. It just depends on what type of, you know, what attracts you to the space and how you can connect to a lot of things that you're passionate about. And so that's what we really wanted to showcase with this group of NMST. You have kids from all different ranges. You have kids who like art, that just like creating the design. Then you have kids who like the sports aspect of it and how they can connect it to the sports. Then you have kids who like the music NFTs and how music is changing, the NFT is changing the music world. And then you like kids who like to market it and put it on social media and Instagram and just like the whole evolution of this new space.
How has your life changed in the last 2 years since I first met you, since George Floyd, since that week?
I would say that, you know, I'm more focused on the economic solutions. You know, I'm realizing a lot of the injustices that we've been seeing for centuries are from economic injustices. You know, poverty is a big underground foundation for a lot of the trauma that we see today. So I feel that, you know, because of this, my company has really changed my life. Technology has changed my life, and I was able to do pretty well. So I want other people to be able to reap the benefits. I want to pay it forward, and I want to get more people into this space so we can generally find solutions. And I feel that technology is a big indicator in how to solve a lot of these solutions. My friend PJ Hill has always said this, that technology can be the great equalizer.
I just had him on earlier tonight. We were just talking on this very program, Tio. Let me ask you something else it's in line with, but it's a little off the beaten path of what we're talking. Where does the fatherless home fit into fixing the culture of the urban area? PJ's a good example. When this happened a couple of years ago, we were talking about some of the people that were leading the movement and the peaceful protests, and somebody said, yeah, they all got dads at home. That's what they got for a common denominator. It's not about whether they're black or not. It's that they got their dads at home. Where does fatherless fit into the importance of changing a culture?
I mean, it's sad to say, statistics does show that, you know, fatherless homes have an impact on traumatizing youth when they're young. You know, we all like to see ourselves, right? So when young boys don't see older men, being able to teach them how to groom themselves, teach them and set examples for them. It's hard for them to really feel that it's hard for them to see themselves in role models. That's why it's so important for other men to reach out to a lot of these kids who don't have fathers and become mentors. And again, that's why we're creating this community tech hub, because there's going to be a lot of mentorship programs in that. And that's why I'm so passionate about going around working with young men and young boys, because I feel that the one connection that you can have is just by seeing yourself in somebody. So if I'm a young kid, a young black kid, and I see a young black man that really cares about me and loves me, it's going to impact my life and it's going to help me keep on a straight path.
And last, I think along those lines, there, Mackenzie was on with us, we were talking about it, is, you know, a fatherless home isn't just void of a father, and as you mentioned, a role model. It's a form of rejection to some, or abandonment. And that's right. Why mentors that stick with kids are so important, that they can trust them, that they will not run out on them. Where does that fit in?
I mean, it fits in, you know, in all aspects. I mean, when you don't have a father in your home, and you're seeing everybody else with a father in the home, it could take a big toll on self-significance, mm-hmm. which is a key factor to child development. And not only just a fatherless home, but positive role models. But some people can have a father in their home and not be a positive role model. So it's really important to have strong leaders, strong mentors, to really be consistent and advocate for others. And this is why I advertise a lot of the stuff I do, because at first I was against really showcasing a lot of philanthropy work I do. But then I realized the more that I advertise, the more that people want to get involved, and the more that I can encourage other positive male role models to get involved in these young men's lives.
Teo Daniel, thank you for giving us some time. Always good to see you today. We will stay in touch, my man.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you for reaching out. I appreciate it.
You bet. Teo Daniel, doing some things in the community to make a difference. Take a break, come back, finish up this edition of Sports to the Max. Stay with us. Welcome back. Sports Plus to the Max tonight. Tubbs, yeah, I want to talk about something that has nothing to do with what we've been talking about the last couple hours, just something that's kind of mindless and right to the crux of what would be a traditional sports talk show, okay?
Okay, fire away.
Do you think that when we talk about analytics, and we all talk about analytics all the time, right, should there be a separate category for weather? Meaning, if we're going to go this far with data, you take a day mm-hmm. like today where the Twins are playing and there's some precipitation, mm-hmm. Should managers have access to say, you know, Carlos Correa, while he hits, you know, 315 lifetime, he's only 260 when the winds are from the north and it's, you know, 52 degrees out. Do we need to get there because, you know, how the ball travels and how guys respond and play?
Nah, I don't think so. It's funny because baseball is such an analytical sport and they've got numbers for everything.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this
because today we have this bad weather and I'm thinking, is there an analytic category for that?
Yeah, and it's funny because I've joked about that very same thing. It's like, okay, you know, what is this guy's batting average? You know, daytime games on Wednesday.
Yeah, we've kind of heard the day-night thing a little bit. Yeah,
yeah, when, you know, when the temperature's above 70, the humidity's less than 65%, and the wind's coming.
It's like, we've done that in fun, in jest.
We have. I think if you get too far into the weeds, you start to take the athleticism out of the game, and you try and break it down too much. Because if you try and break it down too much, then you're like, maybe we shouldn't play, you know, the conditions, it might not be the best because my guy might be slumping. You know, he might not play the best in this weather condition. And I think at points, we get a little too analytical with things.
Do you think they haven't really uncovered yet? Like do you think there'd be a consistent pattern with, say, Dylan Bundy pitched today? Do you think it would be easy for them to reference and go, look at, well, if it doesn't get above 50 degrees, this guy's pretty unhittable?
Oh, I mean, you could probably find numbers that could support
But I wonder if they're diving that far into it.
It wouldn't surprise me if somebody is, because there are always stats about something. I mean, there are stats about stats about stats. That eventually,
let me get to the crux. Do you think you and Hammer could create an app that would help these managers on that stuff?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Hammer's
would
a
it
genius.
Be difficult for you guys to research that or not?
No, not Hammer.
Well, then you get into things though, like retractable dome, right? Houston and Milwaukee, and they go, well, it's 50 degrees. He's gonna be. Oh, wait. Turns out it's going to be 75 degrees because they're closing the roof. Then what do you do?
Well, and then you're talking about, you know, what is the stitching of the ball? How raised is the stitching compared to, you know, what we're seeing? So, I mean, there are a lot of analytics that we could go down, absolutely. But
But I'm just wondering if there are some that are untapped, is what I'm saying.
I'm sure. Yeah, there's always, everything is always untapped in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, so that's where you're going to leave it. You're just going to let it lie, and you're going to say, we got enough analytics in the game.
We got enough analytics. Too many analytics. It's like too many chefs in the kitchen, right?
Too many chefs in the kitchen, man.
Let it be, you know.
We know what happens then, right?
Man, as John Lennon would say, let it be.
Jeez.
Let it be.
But imagine if we had all these.
Oh, you're terrible, Maxie.
Henry Lake coming up next in WCCO.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them. And designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating canvas sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
At City Harvest, we believe no New Yorker has to go hungry. With your help, we're on the road every day, rescuing over 86 million pounds of nutritious food and delivering it free to millions of New Yorkers, transforming surplus food into sustenance, sustainability, and smiles, rallying thousands of New Yorkers to power a network of nourishment across our city. Feed good for our communities, our city, and our planet. Donate at cityharvest.org.